All right, Phil. Thanks for the time, as always.
You the man, Dad.
I'll give you a preview of what I'm going to say about the Ravens. I'm going to say they got to prove it in the playoffs. So that's just a little preview of what you're missing.
That's right. They got to prove it.
Oh, yeah. What's up? Oh, they proved it all right.
They did.
They are worthy.
As a media member, you have to promote that storyline.
Yes.
It's like the Bills. Oh, they haven't done it in the playoffs. Ravens haven't done in the play. Your dad knows this.
Yeah.
He's in the media now.
I know.
I'm obligated to say that.
How dare he doesn't just fall in line there with the normal rhetoric of the media.
Yes.
What a dummy he is. What's up, everybody? Chris Sims, Ahmed Farid. Yes, it's the Monday after Super Wild Card Weekend. It was a good one.
Oh, my gosh.
It really was. It was a lot of football. I mean, I loved it. I really did. Three games each day. I don't know how you felt about it. You were probably like, wait, I got a life and kids.
So, no, I was working. I was here in the building doing updates in college basketball. But we had the games on. I was able to go home at night and watch the late game both nights. I was not a fan of the change initially, right? I was like, two teams deserve a bye.
Right.
You're going to make the playoffs more random.
Yep.
But after seeing three games both days, I was like, I do want this every year. It was super cool.
It was cool. And it just shows you that, you know, a seven seed, just it's okay. So what?
Yeah.
You know, seven seeds can win a game or at least threaten to win a game like the Colts did. So it's not just a lock to go, oh, there's seven teams. That seven team's going to stink and do all that. No. You know, and through the years, there's been a lot of teams that have missed the playoffs. And I go, ooh, if they got in, they might have won the Super Bowl. I mean,
yeah.
So it was a lot of fun. I think we got a lot of good things to unpack today.
Yeah.
I got a good feel for every game. I've watched a few things on film, not like deep dive, but all the major moments I feel like I got a pretty good grasp on.
And I think we've got a pretty good next round here too, because all the teams that lost, I mean, they're all good teams, but all the teams that lost had some flaws, right?
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's like you look at them, you're like, oh man, I'm bummed they're out of it because I think they could have made a deep run. It was like all the teams that are eliminated now, it's like, yeah, maybe they got some things to work on and sort out.
I think we got the best eight teams.
I agree.
I do. You know, and again, I'll sit here and tell you, yes, I picked Pittsburgh to win. I did.
Oh.
That was the only game I got wrong this weekend as far as picking the games. Mm-hmm. But
that one wasn't on national TV or anything. Well, you didn't have to.
I know.
Like, of all the picks.
The damn is right. But, you know, I'm mad at myself for that pick, just to hit on this real quick.
Yeah.
But also, you know, I'm mad at myself because I fell in the trap. I fell in the trap of, wait, one team has played better than the other team for the last 6 or 7 weeks, really. But I went with, oh, it's the Steelers and Big Ben and Mike Tomlin, and they've been in the playoffs, instead of just looking at it for what it is. And I also think the COVID issues and that kind of scared me away as well.
Yeah.
But
well, sure.
I think ultimately what we saw last night is Pittsburgh definitely isn't one of the eight best teams in the league. And now we are going to have an awesome divisional weekend because really there's no clear mismatch in any of these football games. They all should be good, right?
I know. I'm looking at all these games. I'm like, oh, man, I'd love to see them make a run. But the team they're playing, I'm saying the same thing about them.
Yeah.
So
let's
get into it. We'll start with the three games in the AFC, and then we'll go over to the three games in the NFC. So let's take a look at the AFC playoff bracket. What did we witness over this weekend? The Ravens and Lamar Jackson went off. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see it all mapped out. The Browns moving on. Colts played well, but they lose to Josh Allen and the Bills. So that is laying it out. We're going to start with the game that we had on Sunday night.
Yeah.
NBC. It was the Browns somehow getting out to a 28-0 lead in the first quarter. And I want to start here. I want to start with the soundbite from Baker Mayfield talking to Michelle Tafoya after the game, just to show you how crazy this victory was for the Browns, because they were like literally introducing themselves to other teammates before the game. Here is Baker Mayfield after the game.
It's on the inside, and we believe the whole time, and that's all that matters. We had Michael Dunn stepped in at left guard for Joel Bitonio, and then Michael got hurt, and a guy named Blake that I introduced myself to literally in the locker room before the game stepped up.
It's amazing.
In the fourth quarter.
He literally didn't. He had to think for. You see the pause? A guy named Blake. He had to think of his name for a second. I've never met him.
He might not even be sure that his first name's Blake.
Who
you know,
knows?
It's like a guy named Blake, I think. Incredible. Like, it just no head coach. Which honestly, this might have cost Kevin Stefanski Coach of the Year because they won without him. He wasn't even that important. Just such a, like, I don't even know what you can take away from this game because It's just the strangest of circumstances, both off the field and on the field in the first 15 minutes here.
Well, yeah. I mean, listen, the Stefanski thing's amazing. Yeah, you're right. They played great. But he laid the cement, the foundation, sure, whatever you want to say, for them to be able to handle this type of situation all year long. And, you know, the fact that he, again, they got to coach. He got to get all his points out and across during the week. They didn't go in the game just going like, whoa, we're totally clueless. It exactly stinks that he's not there. But they were prepared to play.
I was going
to
ask you, like, if you went into your playoff game without Gruden there, like, how big of a deal?
I mean, we would have been okay. The one thing I said last night in the pregame show, where I would have missed a Gruden if that was the type of my first, is just the little reminders, the little things to look for.
Yeah.
Hey, Chris, you know, West right slot 72Z bingo, you split. Hey, don't forget about 58 Lexus, right? Just those little reminders like, hey, watch out for the nickel blitz in this format. You know, those little things. There's what I was always like, man, that's what I thought of a Baker Mayfield all week. Not to have that familiar voice in your ear. And then, okay, the little nuances and things he might tell you to be aware for when the play actually does come about. So that's what they missed, but obviously they didn't. And wait, if you're going into the playoffs and whoa, we need to break the ice, the jitters. We haven't won a playoff game in 9 centuries and all that crap. Damn. I mean, it couldn't have started out any better. There's just no other way to say it. Snap over your head, Ben Roethlisberger, touchdown. How about an offense that you're going, whoa, okay, Pittsburgh's got everybody back. How good does it feel to take the field the first time you touch the ball and go, we're up 7-0 and we're on the 46 going in? I mean, so any doubts or self-doubts they had, Pittsburgh did a great job of erasing them for them early on in the football game to give them confidence and go, okay, we belong, and now let's go out there and just kick your ass.
Yeah, the Cleveland Browns were able to do, you know, was they were gifted that first touchdown snap over the head. You're up 7-0. You're like, okay, wow, this is crazy. But they did have to earn their points.
No doubt.
As well in the first quarter. Gifted some, earned the others. They did it with the running game. They did it with Baker Mayfield throughout this game. And I think this is kind of an interesting one Pete threw in here.
Yeah.
Per Next Gen Stats, he was pressured on none of his 34 dropbacks. So you mentioned the holes in the offensive line. A Pittsburgh Steelers team that, had 48 straight games with a sack?
Right.
Like, how does that happen?
Yeah, well, I think it's two things that would jump out to me in that conversation. One, the experience of playing Pittsburgh twice already this year.
Sure.
They realize, like, wait, bad things happen when you hold the football and do those type of things. But really, the game set itself up early on to where they could go, wait, we don't need to take any chances. And Mike Prefer and Van Pelt can tell, like, Baker, hey, we got a lead here. Just get the ball out of your hands. Don't avoid disaster. So the game allowed them to play a conservative approach, too, because they never at any point really had to reaccelerate until it got 35-23. But the thing that, you know, I want to say off of one thing you said there, they still had to make plays, and you're right about that. They get the ball at the 46-yard line. The Pittsburgh Steelers, on third down now, and he's going to throw the 40-yard touchdown pass to Jarvis Landry over the middle. You know, hey, it's bad snap by Marquise Pouncey. Big Ben throws the stupid interception. You know, so you got two star veterans that let you down a little bit. Then, on that play there, the touchdown to Jarvis Landry over the middle, really, they have the perfect – they have a defense called to take away Jarvis Landry over the middle. But – and what's even crazier is – when Baker played Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh the first time around, it was a similar play, and Minka picked it and ran it for a touchdown and a pick six. But it's like the experience of that. Baker saw him this time and, you know, threw a rifle right before he could really get his hand on it. But it was, to your point, it wasn't just like it was laid out there. Yes, they were fortunate, but they made some of their own luck happen. And they were clearly the more physical, intense team on the field, especially in the first half. Pittsburgh was sleepwalking. I don't care if they were down or not. Cleveland was whooping their butt up front, too, in some of these drives, even though they weren't long, long drives. And I think, you know, they were the better team, period.
So what, practice is overrated? Is that what we've learned here?
Well, no, practice is not overrated.
Maybe a little.
But to a degree, maybe this late in the year, all right? I'll say that. And for a team like them where, you know, you've heard me say this, they're kind of basic. It's not a complicated formula. It's, hey, we're going to pull a guard and knock your end out, and we're going to run inside-outside zone, and we're going to run bootleg. So it's not like it's like, oh, crap, we've never run this play, or, man, I wish I would have got to throw this new route we put in the game plan a few times live action.
But they are who they are.
They are there, but there's going to be things they need to practice this week with Kansas City.
All right, let's take a little bit closer look at the running game here. Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb went off again, combined 124 rushing yards, 82 receiving yards, 3 total touchdowns. Knew it was the way they were going to have to win, and it was the way they won in this one. We're going to go deep dive into one of those touchdowns here. So this is our film deep dive brought to you by Applebee's, which I'm a big fan of Applebee's. They got a wide selection.
Come on.
I eat it all the time. I wouldn't
Burgers
just say that.
Fries.
Exactly. Yeah. It's
every
like
time.
Good American food.
Right.
So we're going to go into Kareem Hunt. He had 2 rushing touchdowns in the first quarter. We're going to take a closer look at the second touchdown that he had in this game. What did you see specifically about that play?
Well, it's shotgun passing formation, right? That's the first thing that jumps out to me. And then you just mentioned Pittsburgh. You know, at this point of the game, and don't let this run yet. Stop this right here just for a second. But Pittsburgh, to this point in the game, the quick passing game was starting to work. So, I mean, the Cleveland Browns, the quick passing game is working. So Pittsburgh's got to worry about it. It's not like they can go, well, it's shotgun. And, you know, okay, they're not throwing that good. So let's put all our eggs into stop the run basket. No, they had to defend the pass. The best thing about this is, and if you could rewind this for me back there, James, is what I love is, The motion, that's what's the start of it. And David Njoku coming across, that gives him the leverage and start it, James. Go ahead and let it go. So there's Njoku in motion. Now he gets to pin Highsmith down over there. Mm. And as they do that, the center, J.C. Treader, he pulls. And go back one more time, James, so we can break this down. But the center, who you see snaps the ball here, okay, he is going to pull around. Kareem Hunt does a great job of kind of just being patient, letting his blockers get there. And once he sees J.C. Treader get his body on Vince Williams, he goes, now I can turn the corner and put the pedal to the metal to score the touchdown. J.C. Treader pancakes Vince Williams. It's an unbelievable run-blocking offensive line. All these guys can pull. All these guys can overpower you. You can't just play pass because Kareem Hunt's in the game, right? You're thinking, oh, it's not Nick Chubb. It's Kareem Hunt. They'll probably throw the ball. No, he's just as talented or very close to as talented as Nick Chubb and powerful in that. But that just showed the overall game. You know, schematical issues that Cleveland gave Pittsburgh and then just utter physical, we're going to beat you up mano-a-mano.
Yeah.
And that was the impressive part of what Cleveland brought to the table.
And J.C. Treader was the guy that was able to spring Nick Chubb on that long, short little pass where he broke it, right? He kind of
got out
messed
there,
up the guy that was covering Chubb.
And got
Chubb.
The push down there. It might have been Vince Williams again now that I'm thinking about it. I can't remember. But extremely athletic. One of the better centers in all of football. And the amazing thing is they did this last night without one of the better guards in all of football, in Joel Bitonio. So that's something to watch for here. But, you know, Cleveland's going to have a lot of confidence going into Kansas City this weekend.
Having said that, it did get a little close, right? I was thinking when I was watching the game, I was like, well, if you're going to fall behind 28 points, the best time to do it is the first quarter. You know, it's an ultimate best time ever.
Definitely.
If it's going to happen. So they had time to come back, which they did. I put a key moment for me was when the Steelers were down 12.
Right.
They had that 4th-and-1 from their own 46. Remember that?
Yeah,
and it seemed
like
all the momentum had shifted towards Pittsburgh. And I thought, wow, they're going to go for this here because they've got all the momentum. They're doing basically whatever they want to do on offense because I was looking at the drives they had for Pittsburgh. From the midway point of the second quarter on, they had drives of 89 yards for a touchdown, 84 yards for a touchdown, 68 touchdowns, 76 and 77, all for touchdowns.
Right.
I mean, when's the last time a team did that in a game and didn't completely dominate, right?
And
you can say some of it was, I know the Browns were taking the pedal off the gas, maybe a little bit.
Yeah, but I don't really think so.
Right?
I don't think it was a total – it wasn't like a prevent, like, oh, we're up by so much, we're just going to play vanilla and do all that.
Right.
You know, I think the first thing is, you know, something you and I have talked about a lot on the podcast. You know, they came out in the second half and attacked Pittsburgh. Instead of like, oh – we're going to execute and throw 12 4-yard passes all the way down the field and have to play exactly perfect and pass protect perfect and catch every tight ball and every tight window. And Big Ben's going to have to throw every ball perfectly so our guys don't drop it into these tight windows. There's just too much. There's no room for error in that style of football. And you saw that last night. Oh, you miss a throw? Interception. Oh, you wanted to jam it in there over the middle? Tip pass. They've seen you do that 74 times already this game.
Yeah.
Oh, they got their hands up. The second half, they came out, and It was Big Ben with an aggressive attitude. The play calls were to push the ball down the field. And, you know, that sometimes, all the time, makes life easier. And it makes the underneath completions open. So, because I had a lot of friends texting me, like, what's Pittsburgh doing different? Or is it Cleveland? And I just went, well, really, I think it's the mindset of the play caller and Big Ben in the second half that were the difference in why they started to move the football. Now to your fourth and one question.
Yeah.
I didn't have a problem with it.
Okay.
Okay? It's a tough one. I understand all the points you're saying. All right? Maybe I'm old school. But, you know, also to take into this point, you're right. The Pittsburgh offense was doing really well. They had their mojo going at that point. You know, what was it? 23? They were 23 unanswered points, right? Or no, it wasn't 23. It was 16 unanswered points.
Yeah.
But
they were probably feeling maybe a little bit better about their defense.
That's where we got to go, right? Their defense was kicking butt.
Yeah.
I mean, Cleveland couldn't move an inch in the third quarter. They really couldn't do anything. I think Cleveland had, what, like 23 yards total offense or 30 yards total offense. So this is a defensive coach who built a team through his defense. Mm-hmm. And he's going, okay, I think we've righted the ship here, and I feel really good about my defense. I know we're still down by 12, but he's also looking at it like, I've been stopped on fourth and one. I've been stopped on third and one.
You have no running game that
and
you can lean
on. And we have no running game, and I don't want to give them the short field and then just let them have one play and catch the momentum. So I get what everybody's saying. I understand the question. I'm not going to sit here and eviscerate Mike Tomlin for that. Not with the Pittsburgh Steelers defense and the way the game was going at that point. I have no issue with it.
So really, then you give credit to Cleveland.
Right.
They did it. They had that crucial third and two. Jarvis Landry, remember that little completion there where Baker thought about running for a second, pulled it back, threw it to Landry. That was huge because that was at their own 30. If they don't convert that, they're punting the ball right back, and who knows what happens.
It might have been the play of the game. You're right. Because Pittsburgh gets on the field, and then I would go, oh, watch out. I mean, it's – yes, but go ahead.
And it ends with Nick Chubb with a long run after the catch for the touchdown.
Right.
And then the game kind of was over.
That was about
that point.
It.
It felt like the game was over.
Yeah, that took the wind out of Pittsburgh. You know, you fight that hard to come back, and now you're going to be down like, you know, three scores once again, legit three touchdown scores too. That was a backbreaker. And that's where I want to give Cleveland, Baker Mayfield, Alex Van Pelt, Stefanski a lot of credit for calling plays that weren't stupid or overly aggressive, but aggressive enough to go, we're not just going to like crawl in a shell here and let you back in the game.
Sure.
That was where I really respected it. You know, they pushed the issue. Oh, third and two. Oh, we got the great Browns offensive line. You know, they knew the Steelers were going to sell out to stop the run. So let's get Jarvis Landry and try to make something happen and win that way instead of like, can we block to it, Hayward, you know, TJ Watt and the rest of these freaks on that line. They just said, let's just go our one guy against their guy and let our really damn good quarterback throw the ball.
Pete wants to give a damn okay
damn.
In this game.
Okay.
James, can we do it? Can we run the damn okay song?
James might not have been ready for that.
I know. I really did spring it on really, super fast.
Totally. He's looking over there. James is like, wait, what?
Well, we do that. I'm just keeping him on his toes. Boom. Right? It's playoff football.
Damn.
Oh, there we go.
There's James. He's clutch.
Yeah, no, I mean,
he's like, stop talking, the legal guys. I'm ready to play the song.
Oh, baby. I am Chris Sims. Okay. Damn. Okay.
Well done, James. Pete wants to give it to Browns corner MJ Stewart.
Sure.
Browns missing two of their top three corners with Denzel Ward and Kevin Johnson out due to COVID. He did allow 12 catches, 99 yards, but just an average of 8.3 yards per completion.
Yeah.
So
feisty player.
Feisty.
He is. He's good in the run game. He tackles. He doesn't have great speed, so he's not going to be able to cover people, you know, all day long, man-to-man, all over the football field. He's kind of a hybrid safety nickel type of guy. But, yeah, I mean, you know, had some timely plays, some timely tackles. You know, of course, got the interception. I understand that. There's a few guys in that defense we could give damn okay to.
Yeah.
But, good for MJ Stewart. And that secondary in general. No, really, that was impressive, you know, because – no,
even though they gave up 501 yards to Big Ben,
that's okay. It doesn't matter. You know, it's 500 yards at a loss. That's all that matters. And you know, but Carl Joseph made a few plays during the football game. And then, of course, you know, MJ Stewart, that was cool to see because their secondary was undermanned. Yep. That was big time.
The one final thing I want to say is, for me, is that I am sympathetic to Steeler fans this year because I feel like this was a really sucky year for them.
That's tough.
Because you have this great start, right? But no one's giving you credit for it. So you're having to fight for, like, respect, even though your team's 11-0.
Right.
Then the team falls apart. You get beat in the playoffs by a COVID-depleted Browns. I was listing the fans that I think had a better and more enjoyable season than the Steelers, and there were a lot of non-playoff teams. Like, I think Washington, their fans probably feel better about the year. Like the Giants, Carolina, maybe even Arizona, Miami, Chargers. Like, it's just a rough year to be a Steelers fan. Even though you're 12-4, you feel like this is good.
No, well, you get your hopes so high.
You did.
And you get to 10-0 and 11-0, and you go, like, whoa, we're like, we can win the Super Bowl this year.
Yeah.
No, I understand that.
It fell apart fast.
It really did. It fell apart fast. It went downhill fast for Big Ben in a hurry.
You think he comes back?
That's going to be interesting to see. I think it's very much on the fence. I really do. You know, this is not like Tom Brady last year. Tom Brady last year, I still went, man, he can shuffle around the pocket and his arm is still top notch. It was just like, you heard me, was it willing to stand in there and take shots to throw the ball down the field? You know, but Ben, you know, the movement's an issue. You know, there's been a few games here down the stretch where I go, damn, the arm, it doesn't, the ball's not popping out of his hands. You know, and, you know, he's taken a lot of beatings over his career. So I think that's very much in the air. We'll see where that goes. He obviously is contemplating it. You don't sit on the sidelines on the bench and cry and take on all the atmosphere and the stadium and all that unless you're thinking this could be my last game as a Pittsburgh Steeler. I truly believe that's what was going through his head.
There were tears of joy. He's like, I finally threw for 500 yards in a playoff game.
I don't think he gave it there.
Okay. So the Browns win. Steelers season mercifully done.
Yeah.
It was a slog at the end there. The Ravens season continues. They get revenge on the Tennessee Titans. They get revenge on the logo on the field as well.
Yes, they did.
I like that stuff.
Oh, I do
too. I'm a fan of that.
Come on.
Like, some people are like, grow up, act like you've been there before.
What?
That's not fun.
What? This is football.
Exactly.
This is not like, you know, choir practice. Get the hell out of here.
Yep.
It's attitude. It's emotion. It's toughness. It's, you know, motivation from disrespect. All that stuff goes in the NFL. The Ravens are the ultimate team. They look for anything. The Ravens are chippy. If they were going to church as a team, they would be chippy. Like, we might need to kick the priest's butt today.
Yeah.
That's the way they're wired. Those are the guys they drafted.
Yeah, they don't even like each other. They're like how the season started out.
Well, right? Exactly. Yeah. Right. This is who they've accumulated, and they always pillage the biggest, baddest mofos on the planet. That's what the Baltimore does. So, yeah, do you think they wanted revenge on a team that beat them twice, knocked them out of the playoffs last year, and then danced on their album before a game started? Of course they did. And I love that Baltimore makes it personal that way.
They did. And it was always going to be, you know, rushing attack versus rushing attack. Who is going to be able to stop? And you on this podcast last Wednesday said you felt better about the Ravens being able to slow down Derrick Henry. And they were able to do that. I think we have a comparison of what Lamar Jackson did in this game as opposed to Derrick Henry. So Derrick Henry, 40 yards. That was his low.
I think this year, right?
18 carries.
Yeah.
Where Lamar Jackson went off 136 yards on 16 carries, had that long one, the 48-yard touchdown. Lamar Jackson took the game on his shoulders, and I give him a lot of credit because they were down. A lot like Josh Allen in a game that we're going to get to. It was like they were down, they needed a play, and it was like right when they needed that play, on a 3rd-and-9, he goes 48 yards for a touchdown.
Well, he made so many plays throughout the football game. You know, and hold on, I'll break that down in a second.
Okay.
There was a 3rd-and-9 when they were down 10-0 and backed up in their own area. And he scrambled out to the right and threw to Mark Andrews on the right sideline where at that moment you're going, wait, Tennessee's had the ball twice. They kicked the field goal. They scored a touchdown. Baltimore's about to go 3-and-out and give them the ball back again with pretty good field position. You're going, this could get out of hand here. We better watch out. And then he makes that throw. And the game was really never the same since that point. And that's why you draft a guy like Lamar Jackson or you pay superstars in your team because that's what they can do. They can make a play outside the realm of the scheme or what the coach designed in a big moment to their then, you know, tip the scales of momentum into your favor. That was amazing. That drive was really good. But then, yes, I mean, the 10-3 score, they're at midfield. It was 3rd and 9, right, when he dropped
that? 3rd and 9, yeah.
3rd and 9, right? The Titans, 4-man rush. They're playing a unique defense. They're playing what I would say is a game plan defense to stop what the Ravens do and Lamar Jackson. It's not something. So here we go. You know, shotgun. Here's Lamar Jackson. He's got 3 receivers to his right. James, be ready. I might tell you to stop and slow down and do things like that. But it's man-to-man with everybody. Don't start it yet. It's man-to-man with everybody, Ahmed, except for the 2 safeties deep in the middle of the field.
Okay.
And they're not going to be responsible for anything. They're actually going to be playing zone and looking for people across the middle because the Ravens only throw the ball in the middle. So they know that. Also, with them playing zone, who are their eyes on? They get to see Lamar Jackson when he breaks the... So they're playing a defense that is specific to Baltimore and not, like, stupid. Like, okay, this is thought out, and we have 2 pretty good athletes to watch Lamar, if he does break the pocket, to track him down. But he's Lamar Jackson, and it doesn't freaking matter. So go ahead and roll it, James, and just let it go. So here he goes. Andrew's in motion. He drops back to pass. Okay, he's got max protection. You see it's a 3-man route. You saw. Now rewind it 1 time for me, James, just a little bit there. Yep, you're good. Now let it go. Now watch these safeties in the back. You're going to see they're going to kind of come downhill.
Yeah.
They're playing crossers, and they're looking for him. Byard, at this moment right here, the guy on the 35 on the hash there, all right, let it go. He's in a great position. He's going, wait, I'm going to – whoa, he's too fast. He's by me. I mean, that's really what happened.
Yeah.
So it was not a bad defense by Vrabel. This is probably why he punts later in the game in a 4th down situation. But I think, you know, ultimately, the greatness of this is just Lamar Jackson. He's special. There's only a few guys in the history of the sport that could have made this type of run. And, you know, between the scramble play we talked about before where he threw for the 1st down and that play right there, that really put them in the driver's seat. And they never really relinquished the momentum of the football game and the physicalities after that.
They scored their 1st drive of the 2nd half for them. Lamar had 2 rushing 1st downs, 1 on a 23-yard run on a 3rd and 2.
Right.
The drive ended with a J.K. Dobbins 4-yard touchdown run.
Yeah, right.
And so
off
it was like
left
right
edge
at the end of the 1st half.
Yeah.
Boom, turn the tide. 2nd half, 1st possession. Lamar taking the game into his own hands once again.
Phenomenal.
He stepped up. You could tell there was a lot of pressure on him. The way he talked after the game, you could tell
he
was ready.
Yes.
To like,
he was still amped up. And
he
like,
was
I'm excited. I won my 1st playoff game. This is awesome. And I did awesome. And this is really cool that next week I got to go play Patrick Mahomes. Or, you know, not Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen in Buffalo.
So how did they stop Derrick Henry? How did they shut him down? They had 8 in the box on 72% of Henry's rushes.
Yep.
So that was one of them. It was 63% in last year's playoff. Here, if you're watching on YouTube, you can see the comparison here. Is that last year and this year? Yep. So that's 2019 on the left.
Yep.
His little squiggly lines are going everywhere, including way down the field.
Yeah, they kicked butt last year in that, but it was a different story.
Yeah.
Well, first is had a healthy Calais Campbell and Brandon Williams, who they didn't have. You know, they didn't have Calais Campbell in the playoffs last year. They didn't have Calais Campbell or Brandon Williams in their first matchup earlier this year. You know, again, we just talked about a player on the offensive side who made a difference just with his pure ability. Brandon Williams and Calais Campbell, to me, that's where you start the conversation. They dominated, and they were the difference between the defense I saw back in, what was that, week 8 or 10? I can't even remember anymore when they played. But a lot of 5-man fronts to answer your question. 5-man fronts. Baltimore sometimes is a team that'll 2-gap, right? Let their defensive tackles, like, hold the guy up, and then you just throw the guy opposite of where the ball is. And then the linebackers have to read off of that. So the linebacker's also going 2 gaps, and he's going, wait, Calais Campbell threw the guy that way, and now he's in that hole, so I got to be over here in the other hole now. They didn't do much of that in this game. They played 5-man fronts, and they just said, you win your gap, you win your gap, you win your gap. And now the linebackers didn't have to read the guys in front of them. So they always had a guy in every gap, and especially when it came to cutback lanes. That was a big thing. Derrick Henry and company loved to, let's say, the zone play to the left. Run the zone play to the left. Everybody's trying to fast flow over there. And as soon as he sees the backside linebacker get too fast, he puts his foot in the ground and cuts back, and there's nobody there. Baltimore never got in that situation. In fact, more times than not, they loaded the weak side of the run, the offense, and just said, hey, Calais, Brandon Williams. You play the strong side, the front side, and dominate those guys because you'll dominate them, and now he's going to look to cut back, and we'll have no lanes for him. And also within that, and just this gap scheme, you might have heard me say this before too, but it's a phrase I use with defenders a lot, shoot your gun, right? And what I mean by that is like Patrick Queen, linebacker, Malik Harrison, linebacker, when they play those one-gap things, okay, they know the gap they're responsible for. They're not reading anything. And when they saw the hole, they just went through it. Whether Derrick Henry was there or not, you go through it because he's more than likely he's going to be there at some point.
Right.
And that never let him get momentum or his power or anything going to where, okay, now he's hitting you at 2 yards and driving you forward, and it's a 4 or 5 yard gain. They always made contact with him at the line of scrimmage, behind the line of scrimmage, and he really was never able to get going throughout the day.
You have to trust your secondary if you're going to go with that strategy.
That's where we got to go next. You're exactly right. You got to trust your secondary. The two guys they got are special. They realize, like, oh, wait, we got to stop Derrick Henry. We're paying these damn corners all this money. We're going to have to put them in tough spots. And, you know, the one thing I'll say that I don't like, the Titans' offense is an offense, too, where I just wish it was a little bit more creative. I think once Baltimore in those first two drives, they went, okay, wait, you got a few game plan tricks for us. All right, now we've seen them, and they settled in. You know, they were really all over everything pass game related from there on out. I really think Wink Martindale, along with the talent they have in the secondary, they did a great job of not only just beating guys mano-a-mano, but also there was some certain formations where, like I said, it's 5 and 6 men at the line of scrimmage. They're a little outnumbered in the pass game, but they were taught to, hey, when they're in this formation, they do this, and if this guy goes out, the guy behind him's going to go in, and they were all over those type of concepts. So it was very impressive.
They felt comfortable. They weren't going to be caught with their pants down.
That's the way to put it.
Yeah.
They were comfortable to put the guys at the line of scrimmage because they felt comfortable. You're exactly right. They wouldn't get exposed with their high knees on the back end.
And then Marcus Peters got that interception when the receiver fell at the end of the game, stomped on the logo. The rest is history.
Yeah.
One possible concern here for the Ravens.
Right.
Comes from Cam Lloyd-Jones.
Okay, what up, Cam Lloyd-Jones?
Any concern about Baltimore's offense, though, after only putting up 20 against a pretty lackluster Titans D, or was it just a good game plan by Vrabel? I don't know if you can call it a good game plan when the quarterback does that.
Well,
that's how you know they're going to beat you. But, yeah, what do you think? 20 points against a defense that really was not good at all.
Well, it's a matchup game. Anybody that listened to the podcast last week, you know, the Titans match up really well with Baltimore. Really well. I picked the Ravens to win only because I just felt like they were playing better right now. Everything as far as the matchup is concerned, the Tennessee, the biggest weakness is their pass defense. Baltimore's not a great pass offense. They're not going to be able to expose that part of it. Tennessee does have big people. They have a Mike Vrabel who does outside-the-box thinking. Hey, we'll do this with all these crazy runs and all that. So I'm not concerned. I'm not. The most important thing was to win the football game. You know, I don't have any doubts, and I think this offense will look a lot different when they play Buffalo this week, who doesn't match up as well with them as the Tennessee Titans do. So that's I'm not concerned. And other thing, and I'm glad our guy asked this question.
Yep.
Here's one thing that I think really does not get talked about. 7 for 109 for Hollywood Brown. That, to me, was the most important stat of the day. The Ravens, we just talked about on the scramble, right, we're going to stop Lamar running, and we're going to stop over-the-middle throws. They never throw the ball outside the number. It's something I've been asking about for the last 4 weeks, anybody's been listening to the pod. Not that it was like, oh, my gosh, these are the most unbelievable plays, but enough to where you went, you better defend out there. They're going to throw it out there. Hollywood Brown had out routes, little six-yard curl routes, the little fake speed sweeps run around and catch a swing route that were rushing plays, really, all of that. But there at least was the element of, if you give us the look, we're going to throw it out there to our receiver. And that's going to help their offense out long term. It's going to make people go, wait, we can't just void that area and act like they're not going to throw it there anymore.
His first 100-yard receiving game since week 1 for Hollywood Brown. So a good time to get it in playoff game number one. I got one pop quiz for you.
Okay.
Lamar Jackson joins Dan Marino and Patrick Mahomes as the only players in NFL history with what? He's in a
hold on
exclusive group with Marino and Mahomes now.
Well, they both won MVPs at a very young age.
You're getting there, yeah.
And then so, and then they, I'm guessing, both won playoff games at a very young age.
Boom. You just got it.
Both of them? There
they,
we go.
Only three to have done it in their age 23 seasons or before.
And he's really kind of beaten them both because he has a Heisman that they don't have either. So
yeah. He's, right? That he's category, chilling. He's alone.
He's alone,
he's alone in that category.
Yes, yes.
It was cool. I was glad to see it.
Me too.
Because I don't, I really don't, as much as we joke about the narrative of like, oh, he hasn't done it in the playoffs, that sucks.
It's a bull crap narrative.
When you have good players,
right.
Like you don't, they don't need that hanging over their head. If, no. You know, it's like, so
and
it's
there's
like
other good players on their team too that exactly. Lost those games. It wasn't, I mean, you know, like we talked about. Yeah, Derrick Henry ran for a lot of yards on that defense last year.
Right.
Lamar wasn't out there to play defensive tackle.
If he was, he would have stopped him because yeah. I think Lamar's that good.
It is good. You're right, though, because we don't want false narratives, and that's what that was. I understand it, but it's just anybody that knows and listens to this, it's bigger than one man. It's a team sport.
And Josh Allen, he has now done it in the playoffs. Your boy Blue.
My boy Blue.
Which I understand you have. There's a new song.
I think I got two new songs, actually.
Wait, two. Both on Allen or no?
No, one on Allen and one on Lamar.
Wait, you have one on Lamar?
I do. I've had it. And I kind of just, when I got done with the show today, I was like, yeah, I really do need a Lamar song. And I know I've hummed this song to myself before. So first off, what do you want? You want Lamar or Josh Allen? How do you want me to make a fool of myself?
You've never done, this is the debut of the Lamar one.
Right.
The Josh Allen one you brought out on PFT.
I did.
Right, with Mike.
Yes.
Which I'm mad about that. Debut new songs on Unbuttoned. That's where all new songs
I got excited.
Need to start.
I got excited.
It's too quick. All right, let's hear the Lamar one.
So I don't even know who sings this original song.
Okay.
But it's la 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 la, la 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 la. La 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 Lamar Jackson, do do dee do, he'll run by you.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, Pete.
Who's,
Pete goes,
I don't know who
amazing.
Sings that original
Pete, you know
song.
Who sings that?
You know, la 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 la. La
he's
la,
looking
la,
it up.
La, la,
he's going
la,
into
la,
Siri right
la,
now.
La 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 la.
Yes. Okay, that's good.
Yeah, yeah, okay. I don't know if it's good.
Very creative.
I don't know if it's good.
I have heard your Josh Allen one. I think your Josh Allen one is still better.
Okay, good.
Although I'll give you the reviews here in a second, but let's hear the Josh Allen.
Giddy up, giddy up, giddy up, Josh. Oh my God. Giddy up, giddy up, giddy up, Josh Allen. Giddy up, giddy up, giddy up. It's my boy Blue.
Oh, that's
do,
good.
Do, 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 do.
That one's elevating
you
high.
Like that?
You know,
okay.
That might almost be as good as my homies.
Okay,
it's
good.
It got into that. So Sims homies,
yes.
You know, they follow our account. Huge
yes.
Fan.
Right.
He goes, I'm a huge fan, and mean no offense when I say this, the Josh Allen song isn't great. Big Ben is an all-time great song, so
thank
we like
you.
Big Ben. Nothing better than the Mahomie song. So.
Okay.
But Aru811.
Right.
Says, if you don't sing the Josh Allen song multiple times on the pod, I'll be very sad.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
Don't worry. I think I got to go with it. It just came to me naturally last night as I, honestly, as I was getting ready for bed.
Pete's come through. You ready?
Yeah.
It is Loving You by Minnie Riperton.
That's who it is. Yep.
No idea.
I don't know. We'll see if that Lamar one sticks. But I don't know. I kind of like the giddy up, giddy up, giddy up, Josh
Allen.
That
one's good. There's no doubt about that one.
Giddy
I'm
up,
sorry, Sims homies. You're right
it's
about a lot.
It's my boy Blue.
That's a really good song. and he
you.
Was. And you give him a lot of credit because
Whoa.
You think that the Bills overall, outside of Josh Allen, probably deserve to lose this game.
Without a doubt. They don't win this game unless they have Josh Allen or some quarterback of that nature,
yeah.
Which is there's only like three of them on the planet. So, you know, that's Mahomes or Rodgers or, you know, Deshaun Watson right now. I mean, that's who we're talking about. It's that type of guy. But dominated it on both line of scrimmage. They couldn't run the ball. Josh Allen was the only way they were going to run it. And really, on their touchdown drives, you know, I love their offense, but whether it was pressure or people not open downfield against this Colts defense, it just didn't matter. He was going to make a play or fit it into a tight window or do something amazing. I mean, that's just really where, yeah, he throughout the game just made jaw-dropping plays. I mean, you know, and nothing is more like explanatory than what we saw at the end of the first half when the Colts have a chance to go up 13-7, and I still think they should have kicked the field goal to go up 13-7, mm-hmm. You know, in that moment. But either way, Josh Allen scrambling to the right the throw he makes to Gabe Davis on the right sideline.
Yeah.
I mean, are you kidding me on that? And then a few plays later, he makes another just unbelievable throw running to the left to Gabriel Davis. You know, so it was just so many individual impressive feats by Allen. The game overall was concerning for me for Buffalo. It was too Josh Allen-centric, as I say with any team who goes through the quarterback too much. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, the Colts played better. The Colts played better. It's just the best player on the team was – the best player on the field was number 17 in blue.
Yeah. The fourth and goal from the four, you think they should have kicked it there. They had a third and goal from the one on the previous play. They tossed it out to Jonathan Taylor. We should probably talk about that one a little bit more because that – you know, you got that offensive line. You got Jonathan Taylor, who's been on fire, and that was a good stop by the Bills on that play.
Yes.
Right there.
It was a huge moment, that whole moment.
And they still did have the fourth and goal play. He just overthrew Pittman by
6 inches. Overthrew it. And here's the worst thing about it. Because you look at it and you go, oh, overthrow, and he had a little pressure, right? He was fading away. Yeah. He had no pressure. The pressure was because of him. He put pressure on himself. He made the reason he had to throw the ball 30 yards instead of 18 yards. And if he threw it from 18 yards, he would have been in the middle of the pocket with his feet underneath him and not fading away to make the throw. He had no reason to back up. I don't know what he was doing there. There was a four-man rush. The edge rushers went really high and wide. If he just steps up, he's going to sit there, and it's going to be as easy throw as it gets. He literally gave the defense ends the angle to get close to him. I don't know what he was doing. It's really rare. He's usually great in the pocket that way.
Yeah.
So he did that, and instead of throwing it, like I said, from maybe about the 12-yard line, he threw it from the 19-yard line fading away. And the ball got dropped on, like, the backyard line of the end zone. So it ended up being, like, a 30-yard throw. It didn't need to be that. Huge, that was a huge moment of the game.
Huge moment because... Yeah. You know, they go 10 plays, 91 yards down the field, score a touchdown.
Yes.
Bills' first possession of the second half, field goal.
Right.
Next possession, touchdown. So it kind of got them rolling. But at the same time, I mean, I do feel like we got to give the Colts credit because I don't think we knew. We thought, okay, if they get down 14, they're over. They got to get the lead, lean on the running game. But no, they got down 14 and then go 7 plays, 75 yards, touchdown. And then 5 plays, 76 yards. Touchdown with Nyheim Hines and a Doyle long touchdown. They had big plays.
They did.
Colts offense was big play offense in the second half.
The Bills defense was totally compromised in the football game. You know, it's something I wish I would have kind of explained better last week and maybe even had a little more foresight of what was about to happen here. The Colts have balance and the Bills didn't know what to defend. They were stuck. They always have to protect their front because they are always in danger of being overpowered. But they couldn't go, like, overboard in protecting their front because Frank Reich and T.Y. Hilton and Phillip Rivers and them, they throw the ball a little bit. You know, they exposed them with about the same 3 pass patterns the whole day. It was a shallow cross underneath, and then it was either a slot corner route or a deep crosser who came from the other side and ended up right where that slot corner route. They attacked the same 2 areas in the pass game the whole game. It was about 15 yards down the field, just on the edge of the numbers. And if that guy wasn't open, he had a shallow cross coming open, and they hit them for a big play. It was the same throws all game long. But it didn't matter because the Bills had to worry about, oh, my gosh, we have to crowd the line of scrimmage. We have to stop the run game, or they're going to steamroll us. I mean, to your point, to what you're just saying, it's 24-10, like you're saying.
24-10.
They ran the ball like it was the first quarter. They were like, we don't need to panic. Oh, they're going to play 2 deep safeties? Don't worry. We'll rip off a 20-yard run. I mean, so that's where the Bills were really compromised that way. And
they can't fix it.
They can't fix it.
They're not going to be able to fix it.
Their only thing I can say is, like, a team like Baltimore, it's going to be a tough matchup again because you can get steamrolled, but there's not as much of a pass game to defend. So maybe you can play with and roll the dice on stopping the run a little bit more. That's where it really got dangerous for them. Phillip Rivers played really a pretty solid football game. There's not a lot to talk about. I'll say this, though. The play we just talked about with the missed touchdown on 4th and 1, and then when they had the they drove down, and I believe that was when they missed the field goal.
First drive of the second half?
He had a slant on third down. It might have been a touchdown. Wide open, Michael Pittman over the middle, and he threw it behind him. You know, those are two plays where I just go, man, this game's close. It's like you got to make that play. Josh Allen is making those plays. Phillip Rivers, hey, the fourth and one, a tough throw. I get it. That one, come on. That's day one. I can hit that with my eyes closed. I couldn't believe he missed that throw. That was a big moment in the football game. Mm-hmm. But overall, it was a fun game to watch. But I'm a little concerned with the Bills, yeah.
And then at the end of the game, my final point for the Colts is that they had the choice. They could try a 65-yard field goal from Rodrigo Blankenship or Phil throwing it 55 yards for a Hail Mary.
I know.
Couldn't do either.
He couldn't do either. You're right. Unfortunately. Yeah. Phil threw it about 52, maybe.
I think he threw 52.
52, right? Somewhere in that range.
It didn't get there.
The whole end of the game is a debacle, okay? First off.
Yeah, that fumble, not fumble. And
that
yeah.
was almost a disaster for the NFL. The start off super wild card weekend.
It was a fumble.
I don't know anybody that doesn't think it was a
the
fumble.
The only thing is that if the defender's foot was touching.
And it wasn't.
Yeah, that was the only thing that was kind of close.
I agree with you. But then they ended up showing a few clips from the side where you went, oh, nope, see, the foot didn't touch.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened there. That is crazy. But I'm glad the right team won that football game. But, yeah, Buffalo's got, you know, a challenge. We knew that the defense wasn't great. I didn't expect the Colts to dominate them the way they did.
Yeah.
I can honestly say that. But I just, you know, Josh Allen, again. You know, the fourth and three jump off sides, you know, at the end of the first half.
Yes.
You know, it's just everything is Josh Allen. Oh, then we get down towards the red zone. We got to run Josh Allen because we can't even run our damn running back and get in there. He is phenomenal. And even the fourth quarter touchdown pass to Diggs, this is where he puts so much pressure on you. And you've heard me say this before, like, we talked about it earlier this year with like Russell Wilson and DK Metcalf. Like you see one-on-one, you can't let teams get away with that. You got to throw the DK. Josh is the king of like, it's one-on-one on Diggs. I'm throwing at the Diggs. I'm not letting you off the hook. You're going to have to do something to stop him. He had a play there where it's a third down, the Colts blitz. He's got two guys on the left where he could probably just throw it. They're open. They're going to get the first down. But he just is like, no, you're not playing man-to-man against one of the three or four best receivers in football with a guy named T.J. Carey who's on, what, his second or third team this year? That he wasn't going to let that fly, and I love that about him.
Yep. They got the win.
My boy.
So those are the three games. This is going to be a long podcast because we got some breaking news. Before we get to the NFC three games, we've got breaking news. And you don't know this.
I have no idea.
I'm
going to
break it to you.
Because I'm all here on football right now.
According to multiple reports.
I won't even look up before you talk.
The Eagles have fired Doug Peterson.
Well, there you go.
It's happened.
You heard me say some of the things before we started the podcast.
Yep.
For all full transparency out there, I told Ahmed before the podcast that I had good info that it was more than likely he was going to be fired for a long list of problems that I don't know. But I just know that end of the year meetings didn't go all that well. I don't think the organization heard the answers or had the vision going forward. I don't think they liked what came out of Doug Peterson's mouth. I don't know how much the end of the season and the quarterback situation had to do with it, but I think there's more there than we know from what I was led to believe. Wow. I'm still shocked it happened. I can't lie.
When's the last time you've seen a coach have a job at the end of the season and then within a week do things to not have a job?
I know.
That's unusual.
It is. And especially for a guy who, went to the playoffs, you know, 3 years in a row. It's the first year they missed out in a while, won a Super Bowl.
Is he a good coach?
He's a good coach, yes. I'm not going to say he's a great coach. He's a good coach. He is. But, you know, this is going to be intriguing because, like you just said, these type of firings don't happen.
No.
And not however, so there's got to be more than meets the eye here. And I think that's what's going to be really important to his future is, you know, people are going to dig now and go, wait, what was wrong in Philly? What was going on behind the scenes? And I don't know all the answers to that, but obviously it wasn't good. And Jeffrey Lurie, who's not a, like, dictator, got to fire, you got to be in the Super Bowl every, he's not that type of guy. So that's alarming in itself that he's willing to make this move. Because that means that there's something he doesn't like either.
That's attractive job, right? Because of the ownership situation, like you mentioned. Yeah. He's not a reactionary owner, you don't think.
Right.
He hasn't been in the past.
Right.
And you got, you know, you got the Wentz situation, but who knows how that could resolve itself. Probably an attractive job. Yeah.
It's a good job. It is.
The best.
You have
now?
Some issues. I don't know if it's the best. I wouldn't say that. There's a lot of issues here because of the Wentz issue. You know, there's going to be some rebuilding on their defense. You know, I think there's, you know, defensive line needs to be revamped. O-line's in a pretty good spot. But we know new receivers. That there's a lot of holes to fill. I don't want to say it's a rebuild in Philadelphia, but it's certainly going to have to be, well, we need to reassess and retool our roster this offseason if we really want to be, like, legitimately a playoff contender.
Well, but that might not take very much in the NFC East.
No,
Ron Rivera is the longest tenured coach now in the NFC East at 1 year and 10 days.
Wow.
So he is the guy that's been there the longest. And
that's
also
crazy.
Of note, 2 years, 4 months ago, they unveiled a statue of Foles and Peterson outside the stadium.
Well,
so now we know that once you get a statue – you have at least 2 more years on the job.
You can't
so
get safe, fired.
You're safe for 2 years.
Yeah.
And after that,
well, he always has that, certainly. But this is...
Maybe. I don't know. We've seen some statues come down here over the last
you're right.
18 months. So who knows?
It's
crazy.
Rare. Really crazy.
Surprising, but not surprising after talking to you beforehand.
Yep.
More to come out on that, I'm sure, over the next few days. Let's go to the NFC here.
Yep.
We'll start with the Buccaneers and... the Washington football team,
cool.
who have the longest tenured coach now in the NFC East, and Ron Rivera. This was the story going in, and everyone was talking about it. We were talking about it. Could Washington do enough to pressure Tom Brady and throw off that offense? And they really couldn't. I mean, offensively, the Bucs looked really good.
Yes.
The worry for them is that the Washington football team with Taylor Heineke threw up 23 points against them.
That is the
but,
worry.
You know, so offensively, they look good, and I think it was maybe one of the better performances of our playoff weekend here.
Yeah, well, they were sharp on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, even when they stalled out a little bit in the third quarter and stuff, it was more of their mistakes than I looked at of going like, oh, Washington's outplaying them or anything like that. You know, Washington early on played some defenses where I went, blitzing, maybe trying to be a little creative and different that way. And they got burned by it a little bit. They really did. You know, just trying to be outside the box a little bit as far as, hey, they're probably thinking it's Brady. We got to give them different looks. I also think the one thing just from watching a little on film this morning is they didn't feel like their front four was going to be able to get there by themselves. I think they went into the game like, hey, our front four is good, but damn, this O-line's good. And I don't think our front four can get there just letting them rush all day long. So they tried to blitz and do things like that early on, and we're burned on it a little bit early. Honestly, they played their best defense when they went back to this their same basic, simple stuff that they had been successful with all year long. But, you know, you said it. Brady, the offense, they ran the ball in Washington. So that was one thing. I mean, they mashed that D-line. They could not match up with them in the run game. Fournette and company, that line of scrimmage moved backwards all the time. But then, you know, Ahmed, you and I have talked about this. Hey, listen, almost every big pass play is a play-action pass. That's all that's where they kill it. They kill it with play-action pass. And most of the time, it is an extra lineman in to protect Brady. But, you know, even the touchdown pass to Antonio Brown, right, the 36-yard pass.
Down the sideline where he was open.
It's a double whammy here. It's like it was a play where Washington played a defense that was trying to be creative, and now it's the play-action six-man pass pro, you know, by the Buccaneers. I almost called them the Patriots with Brady. But here, let's stop right here for a second. First off, you see that it's a closed set. You see 87, you know, on the right there, on the right hash. He's going to stay in and block. So they're going to have six linemen. You know, five linemen, one tight end, and in the black, in the back, in the block. So Brady's going to feel very comfortable. And really, basically, it's everybody runs straight.
Yeah.
Now, Washington is trying to run a little combination coverage. To our left here, they're trying to run quarters, where it's like the corner on the left, Fuller, and the safety on the left, they're just responsible for their quarter of the field. On the right, they're kind of trying to play a tricky Tampa 2. And Fuller, or it is, it's Fuller, I'm sorry, on the right. I mixed up my names. 23. He is going to be the deep safety eventually, but he is not used to that, and he ends up following Chris Godwin down the middle of the field too long and doesn't get to his responsibility. So start this play out. Go ahead. You're going to see 23 go back to safety.
Yep.
Go rewind one more time for me, James. Go back.
Yeah.
And now there's 20. You see how 20 goes into the flat here? So they're trying to make it look like, hey, it might be three deep, and now we're playing cover two to that side.
Right.
And Fuller can't follow Godwin down the middle. He's not responsible for that anymore. Once he gets past that, like right there, he's got to come off. He should never be that narrow. Cover two is about high and wide safeties. Now, the other aspect of this is, number 20, you're playing cover two. Yes, you're responsible for the flat, but if there's nobody in the flat, you have to continue to go vertical down the field. There was nobody in the flat. He peeked in the backfield and stopped for a second, and by that time, it was too late. Antonio Brown had run by him, and he couldn't recover, and then Brady just threw an on-the-money throw, which is, listen, this is as explosive as a pass game and the best play-action pass game in all of football right now. So they're dangerous. You got to watch out for them.
Scored on 7 of their 11 drives did the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. 3 touchdowns, 4 field goals. Payne and Sweat and Allen all had multiple hits on Brady.
Yeah.
They did contain Chase Young. No quarterback hits, no tackles for a loss. I know he was a little gimpy in the game.
Right.
But, I mean, that's huge. Not all teams, even if you want to, can figure out a way to do that. It speaks to the offensive line for the Bucs there.
Exactly right.
What about for Washington? I think they got a lot of hope at the end of this game with Taylor Heinicke. Maybe they found something with him. He's a pending free agent, so he might not even be back. But he was able to improvise and make things happen.
Like a movie. I don't even know am I watching real life, or is this some like feel good movie about the guy who got, you know, like he got wronged and now he got his chance, and it's like Rudy Rudiger got to go out there and play
like in a playoff game.
Like it was amazing. I mean, I was sitting there next to my wife in the second half, right? I got done with halftime. I go home. I'm a little behind. I only live about 15 minutes from here. And I'm just like, we're both like, oh my gosh, because we're just sitting here like, Brady and the Bucs are going to blow them out. Brady and the Bucs. And then he just keeps making one play after another. Good for him. It doesn't mean he's a starting quarterback in the NFL, but that was still phenomenal. And it means he's a backup quarterback for sure. I mean, that to me should be erased by the ability to make plays that way. And the way you see he throws the football, he's certainly capable of that. But I think the big thing, you know, I love watching him play and the plays he made and everything like that. But again, I mean, hey, I'm more concerned about the teams that are going to be playing this weekend. The Bucs got to be a little concerned. It's just, if you pick up their blitz and their pressure, you can gash them. It's just too easy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't care who it is here down the stretch. It's just there is holes in their pass defense all over the place. And their pass rush with their front four is not as dominant as it was in the first half of the year. So they kind of have to blitz a little bit too. And you see, Washington, once they got a feel for how they were being blitzed and everything, they started to protect. We saw him hitting guys wide open right down the field, let alone how many drops did they have where they were wide open.
Sure.
There was like 4 or 5 drops where you just go, damn, that's a 20-yard gain. I mean, you know, so they let Tyler Heinicke down a little bit in that fashion too.
Cam Sims and Steven Sims in the game, 10 catches, 137 yards, and 1 touchdown. Are you always partial when you see a Sims?
Always,
out there?
Always.
Even though they go with just the one app.
Yeah, it's cool. It sounds the same. I'm down.
It does sound
brothers
the same.
From another. That's the way I go. You know, brothers from another.
Good game for them. Good game for Washington overall, even though they lost Tampa. They got some issues, but offensively, they can keep up.
Definitely.
With just about any team
just
out there.
Just about any team there is.
Able
that's
to score
right.
31 against a good defense here. Rams scored 30, not all, with their offense as they beat the Seattle Seahawks in Seattle, 30-20. It's the third home playoff loss in franchise history, the second against the Rams for Seattle. Although it was kind of sad when they'd show the wide shot of the stadium. That was one of the times where this weekend I was like, man, that's a bummer, right? That place should be rocking.
Yeah.
It should be loud.
Right.
There's no one there.
I know. I felt the same way with Pittsburgh-Cleveland last night, too.
Yeah.
It's just like, yeah, but you're right. There was a few of those instances this weekend where you're just like, gosh,
yeah.
I missed that.
I wanted to forget about coronavirus.
I know.
Is it not letting me do that?
I think that was the cool thing about watching Tennessee, though. The Titans game, you know, they had all those fans there. That added a little 15, life.
15,000 looked like darn near 100,000.
Like a full stadium, right? You're like, oh, this is amazing. Look at all these people. I know that.
I know.
And the Buffalo game, even though it was, you know, only a quarter of the stadium or less than that, it did add something to it.
All right, credit where credit is due.
Yeah.
You picked the upset.
Yeah, I did.
Like you said, you went 5-1 this week. 20-2 in straight up picks the last 2 weeks you are.
Yeah.
Wow.
I know.
You've got your game going right now.
I think straight up picks, Pete brought this to my attention. Like, of all the people in media, you know, I don't know where going into the last week, I was second in all people in media.
Pete has tabulated all media people.
No, some other website did. We wouldn't trust Pete. We can't trust him. Pete doesn't trust him anymore.
Yeah, he doesn't trust
exactly
himself.
Right. But yeah, my straight up picks have been pretty damn good this year.
Weak Sauce 13 says, props to you, Chris. You were the only analyst I saw who picked the Rams. It was the easiest money I won all weekend. So he used his own money because of something you said.
Cha-ching.
Well done.
Booyah.
So I think it was a really solid performance from the Rams. I mean, down to Jared Goff, who's got a bum thumb. You lose Walford early in this game, with which I don't think that was a dirty hit.
No, I don't either.
I didn't at all.
No.
Really?
Not at all.
Like, listen, Adams wasn't even going full speed. He was just kind of like...
It's a running quarterback.
Yeah.
He's already... You know, again, we got to imagine what you're doing playing football. A guy's running at you, all right? And he's running at you full speed. So as he's getting closer, you're going to get ready to, like, wait, I got to tackle him. Now he's making a cut and putting his foot in the ground and getting low. So you're going, wait, he's about to go through this little hole here. I need to start getting low and getting down there to it. Oh, wait, he's a quarterback and now he's getting down. Hold on. Hold on, let me stop midair and stop myself and not hit you. Some of the things they are asking of the defenders right now,
it's like we're all watching not realistic. We're all watching it in slow motion and thinking that that's how it happened in real time.
It's just not fair to the defenders right now.
And if you look at the play too, Tyler Higbee was supposed to block Adams, didn't even get a fingernail on him.
Yeah,
so that was a
you,
problem.
Tyler. Right.
That was
right.
a problem there too. But despite that, the Rams still win this game. And I think, you know, you put out on Twitter, you know, what do you want to talk about? And there were so many Seattle Seahawks fans that were apoplectic after this game.
Yeah.
Espresso 3 says, WTF went wrong in Seattle halfway through the season. Does the OC need to go? Was it injuries? What's wrong with Russ? He was the worst quarterback on the field Saturday. And there were a lot of comments like that. Like, people in Seattle are like, what happened? Because the year started with a big play offense, not a good defense.
Right.
And it ended, that big play offense just evaporated.
There was never anything more. The offense never continued to grow or build or give you any curveballs or changeups. You know, it just became too predictable, too easy for defenses to break down. You know, like I just talked about before, where, you know, defenses are taught, hey, if the slot receiver goes this way, that means the outside receiver might go this way too. Or there's always a little bit of a correlation, right?
Yeah.
And if you're too basic and don't mix things up and self-scout thyself, you can fall into a defense can go, wait, I can cover all three of these receivers with one guy if I just play him like right here. You know, that's the issue. I like Brian Schottenheimer. I love his run game approach. They probably could have ran the ball a little bit more in this football game, honestly. But anybody who's listened to me, I go on the Regional Sports Network up there in the Seattle area. You know, the podcast, you listen, if you've listened, I've been saying it. They don't do enough on that side of the ball. There's just not enough creativity in the pass game. There's not enough pre-snap movement. There's not enough variation of formations. There's not enough cheap ways to get a guy like DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett the ball without having to make it like always a, you know, we got to pass protect perfect and Russell has to throw the perfect ball and I'll get him open 25 yards down the field. You know, it's just, there's just not enough to the offense. So I like Schottenheimer. Either he has to grow or they have to bring in, though, a pass game coordinator to infuse more ideas into their system.
Well, what do you think, though? Maybe some of the blame goes on Russ. Mehmet 305 says Russell Wilson is a huge part of the problem. 9 years in the league, can't read defenses pre-snap, taking unnecessary sacks, doing most stupid things under pressure. Wow, Mehmet is not happy with what he saw from Russell.
He is not. Now, listen, he's never going to be Brady or something like that. They don't run that kind of offense. He's never been taught, you know,
offense or defense to be that guy, right? You know, I always use the phrase, some of these quarterbacks don't even know what they don't know. You know, they really don't. They would go to someone, like they would, Russell Wilson might go to Kyle Shanahan. If he had a day with him, he'd be like, what? That's how you run that play?
Yeah.
I was wondering how you get him open every time I watch you guys on film. And so, you know, that's not the culture there. And anybody that's listened to the podcast has heard me say Seattle wastes plays. You know, they'll throw a play where it's a pass play. You only throw it against three deep coverage and it'll be two deep coverage and they'll still just go, eh, we'll run it anyways and Russell makes something happen. Oh, yeah, okay. Maybe against the crap teams in football, but not against the best defense in football with that front four and those coaches and Jalen Ramsey and everything like that. I mean, the Rams kicked their ass up front, okay? But kicked their ass up front with four or five, Ahmed. It didn't matter. Hmm. And if they kept seven back in coverage, Seattle had no chance of making anything happen in the pass game. And then when they blitzed five and had six in coverage, it goes again to our thing where they felt comfortable. They were like, so what? It's one less guy. We know what they're doing. We know their route combinations. One less guy. Now Russell can't run, but we can still cover the same with one less guy in the back end because we kind of know where they're going to end up. Russell was not perfect, but he was under pressure. Was there a few throws to our man's point where I go, this guy's open over the middle, and was he looking at the pass rush? Yeah, he was. There's a few plays like that. But overall, I can't sit here and blame Russell Wilson for the game and go, man, he missed plays and missed open receivers or anything like that. No, he needs a little help, a little bit more of a system to help him out. And it can't just be all about him, you know, so much.
Yeah, he had that DK Metcalf throw that could have made it 20 all. But Aaron Donald pressured him, made him throw it a little too quick.
No doubt, right.
So he had to get rid of it again.
There's a four-man rush. He's thinking he's going to have time to throw a post and let it go.
Yeah.
Right. So he has to throw that ball before he wants to. He misses it. That's not his fault. Yeah, I'd like to see him make that throw.
The pick six, was that his fault?
Well, yeah, right.
Yes.
Yes, but not totally, though.
Yeah.
It's a little bit like his Super Bowl interception against the Patriots. It's not a play you read out. It's too quick to read.
Sure.
It's one where you got to go, wait, this is what we do, and we're going to execute it, and you got to trust that your guy's going to get the block and do this. But, man, this 31 Darius Williams, man,
yeah.
I love watching him play. He has got guts. He is not afraid to jump a route and take a chance every now and then. He always competes. And his read and recognition was really the difference in this play. When the motion came over and DK Metcalf now is in motion and now he's going to turn back to Russell Wilson. I mean, as Russell is getting the ball in his hands, Darius Williams is already running up.
Yeah.
He's already running up.
There was a wide receiver there.
He's supposed to try
block.
To get him, but yeah. He made such a quick reaction. It was like, I mean, he almost overran the ball. He almost ran by it and didn't even intercept it. So it's really just a phenomenal play. I don't blame Russell Wilson on that. I blame, again, the predictability of the offense, because that's what it was. To give Darius Williams, he's like, wait, I've seen this too many times. I'm going to jump it. And that's all there was to it. So that I don't blame on Russell Wilson. The missed post, we're not going to blame on Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
Are there a few other plays? Sure.
Sure.
You know, but damn, he did make an unbelievable scramble 51-yard pass to DK Metcalf, too, that I'd go, there's really not many people in the league that could do that either.
Yeah. Yeah. So. And I think we have to give credit, obviously, right to the Rams.
Yes.
I apologize to Rams fans. I feel like this has been heavy negative Seahawks, but the Rams came in knowing what they were, knowing not with one healthy quarterback, leaning on a defense that was statistically the best in the NFL this season against, you know, the run and the pass, really.
Yeah.
Not a whole lot of weaknesses there. So defensively, they relied on what they've done all year. And then offensively, they relied on the rookie, Cam Akers, who I put a key moment in this game was the drive at the first half, the response to the DK Metcalf touchdown.
Right.
On that drive,
oh,
when they came back, he was 69 of the 70 yards on that
drive.
The
little dump pass, right? Was that the dump pass from Jared Goff?
I think so, yeah.
Third down, he just dumps it to Cam Akers. He was kind of running up in the pocket, and he throws it to Cam Akers, and he runs down the sideline for a big gain, right? That was that drive.
I think that was that drive,
I believe so. That was a huge play.
But he had 130.
But you're right. It was third and nine. It was 13-10.
Yeah.
Right, that was it.
He had 131 yards rushing on 28 carries. So there, and he I'm not going to say he was a disappointment, but he came in with a lot of hype in this year. It was like, oh, they're going to ride on Cam Akers. He's the missing piece to that offense to take some pressure off Jared Goff. Well, it finally showed up in the playoffs.
It showed up. It showed up in the month of December. He was amazing then, too. You know, he just got off an ankle injury. You're right, though. He was a little underwhelming at first, just like a Jonathan Taylor with the Colts. I think running backs sometimes are a little like, you know, what's NFL life like? And they can't just put the pedal to the metal yet because they're still thinking and everything's new to them. But he was the MVP of that offense for sure. I mean, that play, I think, to your point, that drive was huge. That play specifically, that was the best play Jared Goff made all day, in my opinion. You know, he did some good things. I don't want to take that away. His toughness and playing in that situation was the best thing he did. But you're right. It's 13-10. You're like, oh, man, the Rams offense, it's nothing special, certainly. It's Strugglesville, and, you know, and you're thinking, ooh, Seahawks got the momentum. He makes that play. Akers goes down the sideline, and then they run it in a few plays later. Here's the thing. I just a little X's and O's. The Rams are like the Tennessee Titans a little bit. They want to run the zones and look for the cutback lanes. They love inside-outside zone, cutback lanes, do all that. Seattle really overplayed the cutback zone stuff. And he did a good job of not overdoing. He stayed front side a lot is what I want to say. They ran a few different plays in this game where it was like, you know, it's going to look like we're trying to run the zone cutback, but you're going to stay front side because we think they're going to slant weak to stop the zone and let's just mash everybody down. He had a few of those runs, and I think the run on that drive for the touchdown was one of those where they were playing cutback to the right. He runs to the left. They're playing, oh, he's going to cut back to the right. But instead of doing that, they just blocked everybody down. He made a move on Bobby Wagner, and that was it.
Yeah, so they were rolling. Sean McVay's got them playing well here in the postseason. Defensively, Leonard Floyd, 7 of his 12 sacks have come against Seattle this season. So he has stepped up in these games against the Seahawks.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of rooting for the Rams because I'm looking at the teams left.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they're like the defensive team. Right? It really isn't another team that most of these other teams rely on their offense. Baltimore, maybe the only one that's close to them.
Them and the Saints. I think the Saints we could probably call a defensive team, too.
Yeah. The Rams are like, hey, we're going to ride our defense. Defense wins championships. We're going to test it.
I like it.
I do, too.
I'm with you. I like
Aaron
it.
Aaron Donald, you have a superstar. Jalen Ramsey, you have a superstar.
They have an attitude about them. Yeah. I love their – you know, like the Ravens. They try to make it personal every week. There's an energy and an attitude about them that I think is football. I don't look at it as like cocky or brash. I just go, no, this is the way, if I was coaching a team, I'd want these kind of guys. Yeah. I want that defense, that kind of in your face. We're not scared of anything. We're ready to compete. And they are. They're a defensive running team. McVay understands who they are, you know, and that's what stinks about the Wolford thing. I was really excited to see what
he had.
You know, and listen, I think it's also just to button this last game or this game up here. Little like intriguing. McVay is still leaving the door open. Oh, we're going to evaluate them both during the week and things like that. That to me, he is saying all these things. If I was reading between the tea leaves, that I'm a little intrigued by John Wolford.
Yeah.
Goff is not necessarily the franchise, and we're going to see how this plays out this week. I'm not just going to give it to Goff because he's got a big contract.
So the NFL does a mic'd up show. I think it airs on Fox. And
right.
I was watching. I just happened to be watching it. And McVay was mic'd up when Wolford was in the game.
Right.
And McVay, he was kind of giddy watching him. And he kept saying to his assistant coaches, he's like got a little Doug Flutie in him. He was comparing him to Doug Flutie. And you could tell he really appreciated the improvisation of Wolford. So,
yes.
Yeah, I think you're onto something there. I think he really enjoys what he can bring.
I think with their team, and to like what you just said, the style of play, he in a lot of ways fits it better than Jared Goff.
Yeah.
We can run you, the bootlegs. Oh, nobody's open. You can run for 10. And honestly, he's every bit as good a thrower as Jared Goff. I was going to try to find a way to say it.
Yeah.
But he throws better spirals. He's just as accurate. So I that's why, I mean, yeah, it's going to be – I'm going to be fascinated to see what happens. LaFleur versus McVay, there's the history of that. The number one scoring defense versus the number one scoring offense. I'm excited for it all.
Me too.
Davante Adams versus Jalen Ramsey.
That's a good game.
Aaron Donald against some of those offensive linemen. It's going to be fun.
But I am. I'm rooting for the Rams. One team I never root for is the Chicago Bears. I don't like them. And I've made that well known on the pod.
Good for you.
And it's just growing up in Michigan. You know, you gotta hate all the Chicago teams. But I hate the Bears more than any other Chicago
team. We know that. Wear it. I like it.
And they came into this game and they did exactly what we thought they would. They did nothing until the last 99-yard drive in garbage time to end the game.
Isn't that insane?
140 yards before that.
Isn't that insane?
140 yards.
So they are a defensive team. I think you should put them in that category.
They're a defensive team.
Yes.
Yes.
But
yes,
you're right. That was, that to me was one of the things I brought up this morning, because I was like, they went 99 yards on the last drive where the defense did not give a damn about anything. I mean, that was an ass whooping by the Saints defense. An ass whooping. I know that the Bears had a chance with the trick play to get some momentum and all that, but it's just not enough offense for a defense like that, the way they're playing. This isn't the same Saints defense that went into overtime with the Bears earlier in the year. This Saints defense is all systems go. You know, Dennis Allen does a lot of cool things. And the formula of just run the ball and bootlegs is just not enough against a team this talented, along with the coaching. And they were just smothered throughout the day.
Now, the Saints offense, that was a struggle. And, I mean, the Bears defense is pretty good.
It is pretty good.
I did like the play where Latavius Murray was blocking Khalil Mack and fell down, got up, and Breeze moved just enough to get it to him for the touchdown.
Play of the day for
that
Drew.
That was the play of the day,
right.
I thought.
Right, I agreed.
For that offense.
Because Latavius is blocking. He's nowhere. He's not supposed to be in the route at all. Nothing. Nobody's open. Drew's, okay, wait, I'm buying time. Please, somebody come open. And really, I think he just went to him going, wait, I have a throwaway spot. But then he realized, wait, he's standing on his feet, and I can give him the ball now.
Yeah.
And he does it. That was a phenomenal play. And really only a guy like a savvy veteran makes those plays usually, like a Drew Brees.
We have a play for you to break down with Drew Brees and Michael Thomas. We saw him get their first touchdown for Michael Thomas, and then this 38-yard reception.
Right.
It was the first pass from Brees to Thomas this year that was 20 or more yards downfield.
Yeah. Well, I feel like there's a little bit more of a concerted effort in the last few weeks of the year, even with Drew in the game, of let's not throw every ball 5 yards. Let's start throwing at 15, 20 and doing that. And this is what this was. This is a little, and go ahead and roll it, James. It's a play action fake, okay? And Emmanuel Sanders is going to go on the deep corner. So there's the little play action fake, deep corner. And then Michael Thomas, I'm going to rewind it one more time for me, James. But Michael Thomas almost follows, right, Emmanuel Sanders? So now the defender, as he goes, he doesn't know. Is he going to go across the field? Oh, wait, he's coming back out?
Yeah.
And it was a good throw by Drew and all of that. But I do think, again, you know, Drew wasn't on fire yesterday. But like you said, that Bears defense and scheme, it matches up well with Sean Payton's offense. I do think they're trying to make a concerted effort, though, to push the ball just a little bit. Not that they have to be bombs away and all of that, but I am seeing Drew come away and looking downfield and trying to push it into those windows, like I said, that are anywhere from 10 to 20 yards, you know, down the field, sidelines or down the middle.
You think that's the last game for Mitchell Trubisky with the Bears?
I don't. I'm not going to say that. Unless they're given a slam dunk. Like, okay, this guy is definitely better. Matt Ryan's coming to Chicago. Matthew Stafford's coming to Chicago. If you don't have something like that, then you stick with Mitchell Trubisky. Don't bring in some Nick Foles type of, well, we think he might be able to beat out Trubisky. No, if you're going to do that, you're Trubisky all the way, let it go. The Bears, you're closer to the top than you are the bottom. So I don't look at this as a rebuild. You just got to fix the O-line, make sure Matt Nagy continues to run the offense that we saw towards the end of the year and now grow that, you know, and then defensively, I mean, there's almost nothing there that's really needed. Maybe another cover corner, but the Bears, I think, are still a good football team. To me, it's about the continuing building of that offense, Nagy having an identity on the offensive side of the ball. We started in December. Hopefully they can carry it into 2021.
Yep. I watched the first half of this game on Nickelodeon with my six-year-old
son. It looked cool.
It was cool. They slimed Michael Thomas, the first touchdown there.
Right, I saw that.
No, he thought it was cool, and the first down line was the slime. It was like a slime
line.
Yeah,
I saw it.
I was able to tell my son.
The slime zone instead of the red zone.
Yeah, and the red zone slime zone. I was able to tell my son, I was like, they got to get to the slime line, and then they get more plays to try to score a touchdown.
that made sense
to him.
That
made sense. Slime line, first down.
It was cool. Yeah. I was into it. I almost wished they had, because Noah Eagle was the play-by-play guy, really good.
Right.
He's like already better than I am. He's right. The son of Ian Eagle. I almost wish they went like more like kid-centric, right? Like just a kid being like, oh my God, I can't believe, what are they doing here? Because it did sound still like an NFL football game.
It was very
official. Nate Wilson was the color commentator. So it wasn't totally like this left field production, but I enjoyed it.
It looked cool. I couldn't hear it. We had it on in our viewing room. You know, we're watching the normal telecast, but one of the TVs had it on, no sound. I got a kick out of it. You know, they score a touchdown, and SpongeBob was there dancing with them in the end zone.
Yeah.
I mean, they had some really cool things, right? It looked good. That's a good job by the NFL and Nickelodeon.
Next year on Peacock, Chris Sims, Ahmed Farid with the kid broadcast.
Okay.
There we go.
I don't know if I'm kid material. I'm a little dangerous for
that
kids.
That is true. That's a good point.
Yeah.
That is a good point. Okay, so that's all six games.
We made it to the end. We hit it all.
So now what I want to do is we finish it like this every year. At the end of the year, we lose teams, and we lost six playoff teams. And so we've got Requiem for a team. Pete, do I need to go in any specific?
And you wore pink and blue today. You didn't want to wear black and send these people off official?
That's a good point. Any order I want. No, that's true. This is kind of darker here, but not. Okay, James, do you want to give me the Requiem music to
cue
get
the
me
music,
in the proper
James.
Mood here as we bury these six teams? There it is.
It's a somber Monday.
It's so sad. It is.
I have a case of the Mondays.
Another Black Monday. All right. Here lie the Pittsburgh Steelers, a team that caused the 72 Dolphins to pop champagne midseason and then caused their own fans to drink heavily thereafter. It was like just a lot of drinking.
A lot of drinking.
From that point forward. An ending that came very quick, making people in Pittsburgh quite sick. And oh, by the way, I would like to say, Big Ben just threw one more pick. He's still racking him up there. Rough end for them.
Rough ending.
Here lie the Indianapolis Colts, a team that was so boring that even Colts fans are glad they no longer have to watch them in the postseason.
How dare you?
I know. They were okay. They were a little boring.
Go with your rhyme. Be quiet.
All right. The defense gave teams a fit, though it did fall off just a bit. Jonathan Taylor is fast, did all he was asked, but at the end, they're all saying, "Daggummit!" They all are at this point.
All like Phillip Rivers.
They all are saying,
"Daggummit!" Shoot darn.
Here lie the Tennessee Titans, a team that showed very little interest in defensive schemes and also COVID protocols at times this year. So both were a little shaky.
Yes.
A little shaky. Derrick Henry is a beast. For 2,000 yards, he did feast. But against Lamar, running like a V12 car, you need to spend more time with your priest. That's the only way to stop him.
You just gotta pray.
You have to pray. And it didn't work.
That was a good one. That's my favorite one yet. I like that.
Here lie the Chicago Bears, a team that taught us less about how to play football this season than the Nickelodeon broadcast they were on. You watch them and you're like, I don't even know.
I don't know what they're doing.
I don't know how to play this game. And neither do they. They looked good at first. And then things reversed. A midseason fall, they hit a brick wall. This franchise, without a doubt, is the worst.
Of all.
And that's an unbiased opinion,
I feel like most people would say that. Sure. I knew that was coming with heat right there.
Two more. Here lie the Seattle Seahawks. Wow, we're burying them early.
It's too young to die.
A team that struggled with its identity all year, having trouble deciding whether they wanted to be bad on defense or bad on offense. They couldn't quite make up their mind.
Right.
They're like, maybe just both. Russell's start was of note. He looked like the GOAT. He can really throw. But did you know he's still yet to get an MVP vote?
Oh, back to the MVP vote. Well done.
Go Hawks. Go Hawks.
We begin where we started.
I feel like we're going to be talking about that next year again.
We probably will.
You know that he's never gotten a...
Yeah, he ain't going to get one this year.
All right, and finally, here lie the Washington football team. A team so bad that they won the NFC East. That's how bad they are. And I think I used that joke last year for the Eagles.
I think you did.
Still applies, 2 years in a row. A new era begins without Dwayne Haskins. They're a playoff team, and now they can dream of one day getting fewer losses than wins. So it checked the playoff team
playoffs.
Check. Playoff team check.
Next year. More wins than losses? No, not yet.
We'll have to wait on that. So,
well done.
Goodbye.
Well done.
We bury those teams. They gave us a lot of good moments, right? And some laughs along the way, but their service to us is done.
We have no more need for you. You're dead to us.
No more need.
You're a good eulogist. Is that what they call you, a eulogist?
Eulogist.
Okay, good.
Urologist.
I almost said that.
So that's it. And we got good matchups coming up next weekend, and we'll be able to bury some more teams.
Yeah, that's right. Come in with the questions Wednesday. I think we're going to probably stick with the formula we've been using, right, Pete? Deep dives, kind of a look forward. You know, I'll look, and I haven't even thought about this yet because I'm still on yesterday, but, you know, wow. Other than we only have one repeat matchup this week, the Saints-Bucks. Hmm. They played all these other ones are fresh. So that'll be cool. We don't know how they really match up. I'll do my best to kind of break these down, forward look. I'm going to deep dive some of more of these games of what went on yesterday just to get a little more nuanced. But send in your questions, please. Ahmed, you the man.
Appreciate you.
Yeah,
We made it through.
We made it through. We did it all. Everybody be safe out there. Be healthy. Take care. Do what's right. And peace out. We'll see you Wednesday. Clap it up. Booyah!
Booyah!